money.
Helping police officers deliver on the most important part of their job, preventing harm and saving lives. That's what today's all about. Because this is a country where everybody should be able to pursue their own measure of happiness and live their lives free from fear, no matter who you are, no matter who you love. That's got to be our priority. That's what today's about. So with that, let me sign this bill.
All right, it is the Rebecca Juraro Show. Thanks for tuning in. And, of course, that was our president, Barack Obama, signing the Violence Against Women Act today.
Very handy with that pen, he is.
Yes, and I would, not quite as handy as we'd like him to be, but
well, okay. In this case.
But in this case, yes, he did a very good thing. And let's not forget, I want to remind people that this was an LGBT inclusive Violence Against Women Act. First time that protections for lesbian and transgender women were included. Gender identity, sexual orientation protections included in this bill, now law.
Yeah.
Very important. Only the second time in our history, counting that and the hate crimes law, that LGBT Americans have been included in any federal legislation. The ball may be not moving as fast as we'd like, boys, girls, and everyone else, but it is moving. And the fact that they were able to get both gender identity and sexual orientation into that law, I think it says something. And we're going to talk about that with our guest tonight, Mara Kiesling, Executive Director of the National Center for Transgender Equality. Mara will be coming up at the bottom of the hour, so stick around for that. Lots of good stuff to talk about with her. I think this is very exciting. I think it's great. It's a great step. There's a lot more I have to say on it, but we'll save most of that for when Mara is on the show. And so, you know, it's interesting. It's funny, you know, around here, when they give you a weather report, you know, we were supposed to get smacked by this huge winter storm, and they give you a weather report in this area, and inevitably, when you look at the New York weather, which is what we get here in New Jersey, it's inevitably my county, where I live, is inevitably right on the line between, like, you know, 1 to 3 inches and 4 to 6, or, you know, we're always right on the edge. And it's so funny because they were predicting, at one point, they were predicting 6 to 12 inches here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know what we got?
Uh-huh.
We got nothing. We got rain. We got wet streets. That's what we got. We got snow for about 10 seconds that didn't stick. I mean, usually, all right, they're off by a little bit.
So where did
this
it
go? It just didn't happen.
Yeah, it didn't go there. Where did it go? Toronto?
You know, I heard that there are other areas that are supposed to get hit. I think like the D.C. area, Boston, those areas. For some reason, we haven't gotten anything. I mean, you look outside in the street. I mean, you know, there were a few snowflakes this afternoon, but nothing that would have counted as like, you know, accumulation. It just, you know, you worry because especially in this area right now, post Sandy. People hear there's another storm coming, they get scared. And with good reason, because you never know. I mean, a lot of people, I don't know if people around the country realize how many of us, and I mean residents of the state of New Jersey, actually there is snow coming down. I just saw a car go by, there's some flakes out there, but nothing that's sticking.
I'll warm up that RAV4.
But people don't realize, you know, just how much damage was done in this area, and that people are still putting their lives together after Sandy. And so when we hear that there's another storm on the way, people get nervous. Now, of course, I don't live near the shore, not near most of the shore anyway. We do technically live near the coast, but not the shore as people think of the shore, which is, you know, the Asbury Park area and Seaside Heights, and that's about 35 miles southeast of here, 35, 40 miles and going further south. That's where that area. But we do live close to Raritan Bay, which connects with, if connect is the right word for for waterways, connects with New York Harbor, which is, of course, was close to ground zero where Sandy hit. We had some pretty bad winds here during Sandy, street signs twisted, all kinds of stuff. But we didn't get the kind of destruction that other areas, that coastal communities really got. But still, people get nervous. When you hear there's another storm on the way, people still get nervous here. I mean, don't forget, a lot of the money that the federal government promised us here in New Jersey to help put stuff together still hasn't made it here. And the money that has is being doled out with an eyedropper. It's really, you know, and you know what? For all my problems with Chris Christie, he really has been an advocate, and he's been doing the best he can. But the reality is this stuff takes so long. And the problem is, of course, is this stuff takes forever. But life continues to go on. You know, your creditors don't give a shit if you're waiting for the federal government to get its shit together. They want to be paid now. And so there's a real problem there. But that's not what we're here to talk about tonight. So we got the Violence Against Women Act, a lot of other interesting stuff. I'll talk a little bit. Let's see what we got here. Well, here's something. I thought this was interesting. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the MMA. Now, actually, I'm not all that familiar with the MMA. I don't even know what MMA stands for, but I do know that it's like a physical contact boxing, kind of full contact karate or something. It's basically brawlers in a ring, as opposed to, you know, boxers. But there is a female competitor. Her name is Fallon Fox. And she recently came out as trans. And this is, you know, she fights against other women. And she is, as far as we know, the very first on-the-record trans female to compete in this league, this MMA. And needless to say, people are freaking out. Oh, my God, you know, it's a whole thing. But apparently, she didn't want it to be an issue, so she didn't go out of her way to make it an issue. Apparently, she was honest with the people who, the associations of boxing commissions. Apparently, this is a real sport. You know, people beating the crap out of each other. Apparently, they already had a transgender policy in place for this. It just hadn't been needed until now. And so we still don't know. We still don't know what's going to happen to Fallon Fox going forward. I'm reading here. You know, she apparently was a man till she was, where does it say? Into her 20s, I guess. This story I'm reading. Well, she has a 16-year-old daughter. And I think that's, you know, it's interesting because, of course, it brings up an interesting issue. And, you know, I would love to know what people think about this because this is a tough issue. And I hesitate to go and make a blanket statement on it because I'm not really sure what the answer is here. And of course, you can get in touch with us. You can call in. We still got plenty of time before Mara gets on. 928-277-4921. And what I'm wondering is, how do people feel about this? Is it, you know, should a person who was born male physically, okay, because don't forget, we're talking about sports. We're talking about a rather violent and brutal sport where strength is a key factor. Somebody who's been on estrogen, testosterone blocking hormones. She's in all ways a woman, except. But is it fair? And I don't know. I really don't know the answer to this. I want people to call in and give me an answer, because I really don't know what the answer is. 928-277-4921. Is it fair for a male-born athlete, any male-born athlete, to compete against women? is there an advantage there, regardless? Now, I am not a doctor. I'm not an endocrinologist. I can't tell you with medical certainty anything. But I think it's a fair question. And, you know, there are certain sports where you would say, well, what difference does it make? You know, baseball, even to an extent, football or basketball, you could see it. Sports where, you know, I mean, but we're talking about a sport where literally sheer physical strength and brutality and being able to throw a punch or a kick faster than or harder than your opponent, hey, it makes a real impact here. And so I'm wondering, I'm not, when I'm on the show here, I'm usually quick to give you my opinion, tell you what I think. I don't know what the answer is here. I really don't. I just don't know whether this is fair. And I would love to hear what people think. If you think that this is fair, you think she shouldn't be competing against women, or what do you think? 928-277-4921. Give us a call. I can't wrap my mind around, because, you know, it's interesting. If you look on the Huffington Post, there is actually a picture of her on the transgender page. If you look, it's towards the top of the page. And, she does not look like a weak woman. I mean, you know, but then again, I've seen some pictures of women bodybuilders who look like tanks, who got bigger arms than most men I know. Would love to. Well, okay, we won't go there. But, you know, I mean, really strong, powerful women who have been born women. So if a woman can achieve that on her own, being a born woman, does it really make a difference if this person is chemically the same as any other woman? If she is on estrogen, if she is taking testosterone blockers, if she is the strength and the power that she is by her own exercise, her own efforts, her own, you know, training, if that's good enough. And that's accept. I don't know. Is it? I guess the key word that I think I'm looking for in this case, because it's a sporting event, is it fair? Is it fair to women? I I'm all for transgender people being allowed into all places and all arenas, and we should be able to compete. And in all ways, we should have the same rights and privileges and access as everyone else. I mean, obviously, right? But this is a little different. There's a reason why, generally speaking, and there are exceptions, but generally speaking, men don't compete head-to-head with women in most sports. There's a reason for that. And so my question is, does that reasoning apply here as well? I really don't know the answer, and I would like one of you to call me and tell me what you think. 928-277-4921. Give us a call. We've still got a few more minutes left. Again, we got Mara Kiesling, Executive Director of the National Center for Transgender Equality, joining us at the bottom of the hour. We've got plenty of good stuff to talk about with Mara. We actually saw Mara at the LGBT 13 convening in Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago. We talked about that on the show last week. And it was great. We had a good time. Got to talk to her and lots of other people. And she, along with Allison Robinson, co-led a great panel on Getting Beyond Trans 101, which I thought was great. And I thought was something that, frankly, I try to do on this show a lot, because I believe, especially for those of you who are listening right now, if you're listening to this show, you know what a transgender person is. I don't need to explain this stuff to you. You know, and I think it's time we start, as in the mainstream media, talking about transgender people as people not transitions. And we had there was an excellent, excellent panel moderated by both Allison and Mara on this topic. And I think we've seen some progress there. Some. Not as much as there should be, not as much as there needs to be, but some. For example, not to toot my own horn at all, but the CNN interview I did with Blake Ellis of CNN Money, and if you caught that, you can still catch it. Go to my profile page on Facebook. You'll see, if you scroll down a bit, you'll see it linked over there. I thought it was great because what they were dealing with, what they were talking about, the topic of the interview was transgender unemployment. I mean, yes, they mentioned that I transitioned in 97, and you know, but they didn't go into my transition. I mean, there was maybe one or two questions, you know, how did you get here, blah, blah, blah. But then they went right into the meat of the of what was really important, which was, okay, you're a transgender person, and now you have to live and work and find a job and stuff, and that was the issue. And that's what I think we need from our mainstream media. That's where I'm hoping we're starting to go as a community, as a media, if you will, as a set of voices, as people who care about these things and speak out on these things, that we're and the mainstream, I'm hoping, is picking up on the reality that our lives don't stop and suddenly go into coast mode once we go from A to B, from male to female or female to male or whatever, that all of a sudden, that's it. That's all you need to know about us. Because then it's, how do you get a job? How do you live? How do you enjoy your life? What happens when you walk into a bar? What happens when you walk into a restaurant? What happens if you want to go to a spa for a massage? What happens? You know, how do these lives get lived? Okay, and you know what? Here's the other thing. People get it when it comes to gay. Because look at where they are now. They're not talking about, oh, what is it to be a gay person? Because people get it. Gay is very simple. You're not dating women, you're dating men. If you're lesbian, you're not dating men, you're dating women. It's a pretty easy concept to grasp. And so people focus on what kind of lives do these people have. In other words, well, what happens when two gay people want to get married? What happens when two gay people want to, file joint taxes? What happens when they want to get an apartment, get a job? Because don't forget, gays and lesbians are denied basic civil rights in the workplace in 29 states. People seem to forget that. You know, we see all this attention from the mainstream media. Oh, gay marriage, gay marriage, gay marriage. I mean, did you see Rachel Maddow last night? Gay marriage, gay marriage, gay marriage. I mean, when is this woman going to get it? That it's not about gay marriage. It's about jobs. It's about having the fuel to make a marriage work. And if you don't have a job and you don't have a place to live, then the right to marriage means nothing. It means nothing. Because if you're, what good does the right to file joint taxes do you if you don't make enough money to file taxes in the first place? That's what these people don't get. That's what super wealthy hosts like Rachel Maddow and Ed Schultz and Lawrence O'Donnell, these people who are making millions and millions of dollars a year talking liberal stuff, they don't seem to get that not everybody is in their personal wealth class. That some of us actually live on our paychecks. You know, we're not all going out and buying Lincoln Continentals like they advertise on their station, on their network. We're not all going for sandals vacations. Some of us can't afford those things. Some of us are living on our paychecks. And you know what? We deserve coverage too. And that's the problem. That's the problem. Because these people are not there to inform. They're not there to cover the issues that mean the most to you personally. What they're there to do is to keep you entertained in between banks of commercials, to keep their sponsors happy. That's who they are interested in keeping happy and satisfied, not you. The sponsors who are paying large amounts of money to advertise on their shows. I'll remind you about Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck, remember Glenn Beck? Glenn Beck was one of the most popular shows on Fox. In fact, I'm not sure if he was more popular than O'Reilly, but he was close. But yet he doesn't have a show anymore on Fox. Do you know why he doesn't have a show anymore on Fox?
Insanity.
Well, no. Actually, because his insanity sells just fine. He had plenty of viewers. But what he did was he went out and did insane things like call Obama a racist and crap like that to the point where sponsors started saying, you know what, I don't want to be involved with this anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and the only ones after a while, the only people who would advertise on his show are gold sellers. You know, these apocalyptic, you know, companies that are, oh, you know, so you should invest in gold in case the economy crashes or something. You know, those were the only people who are still confident enough to invest on his show. Well, all of a sudden, when the sponsors aren't there, when the money stops coming in, guess what? I don't care how popular you are. It's bye-bye, Glenn. And now Glenn Beck is off on doing his own internet thing, still making tons of money. Okay, but the reality is he's not on Fox. And why is he not on Fox? Because he couldn't keep his sponsors happy. Not because of anything that went out on. His viewers were very happy with him and are still today. They followed him to the internet. But he couldn't keep his sponsors happy. He couldn't keep the cash rolling in. And so he went bye-bye. And if you think it's any different over at MSNBC, you're kidding yourself. And that's the problem, because they don't speak to the average working class LGBT or the average working class anybody in America. They speak to rich, six-figure liberals. That's their audience. The people who buy those Lincoln Continentals, the people who take those sandals vacations, that's who they're speaking to. And that means that's why the workplace, the working, hard-working LGBT Americans will never get the kind of coverage that we deserve on that network, because we don't represent enough cash for sponsors. That's the reality. That's why Melissa Harris Perry covers us twice in the year that her show has been on, and then that's it. You know, that's all you ever see. And that's why these things get such huge coverage and GLAAD awards and shit like that. Why? Because it's so rare. It's so rare. All right. Rant over. It's time for a break. We have got one of our favorites here on the show, Nomalee Brennett with Settle Down. We'll see you in 5 minutes with Mara Kiesling.
Face discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity when they seek help. So I want to thank Sharon Stapel, who's here. Where'd she go? There she is, right there. For the work she's doing. Great work she's doing with the Anti-Violence Project. But Sharon and all the other advocates who are focused on this community, they can't do it alone. And then now they won't have to. That's what today is all about.
All right, we are back. It's the Rebecca Juro Show. And, of course, that was President Obama. He used the magic words, sexual orientation and gender identity, which was nice to see. And we've got Mara Kiesling on the line. Hi, Mara. How you doing?
Hey, good, Becky. Thanks for having me.
She's doing.
You bet. Mike, were you? Okay. Mike was having a moment there. I wanted to ask you about this. I wanted to have you on, of course, because this is a huge day for us, both as an LGBT community and as the trans community, because the protections that we were worried about might not make it into this reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act. did make it in after all. The first thing I wanted to ask you was, now we know that sexual orientation and gender identity are included, but I don't know, and maybe you can explain this, does that mean that it actually includes all trans women, any woman who identifies as trans, or are there walls there? How does that play out?
Well, I should say that it applies to all LGBT people, not just women. So it's gay men, trans women, trans men, bi men, genderqueer people. So not just trans women. I mean, it's LGBT people were identified as a specific purpose area. We were identified as an underserved community. So programs that get money from the federal government to do anti-violence programs, organizations and such, can serve all trans people according to the law, which is great.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to ask you about was this seems like a big deal politically, in the sense that originally Republicans were resisting signing on to this because, and in fact, in the House, they passed a version that stripped out protections for LGBT people. And yet they managed to get this thing through both houses and get it signed by President Obama. In your opinion, does that indicate that there's progress being made in terms of how members of Congress, especially Republicans, are perceiving LGBT inclusive legislation, and could that have some implications going forward?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of big political wins here. So I mean, to be clear, I think what some folks don't understand here is this is the first ever federal legislation that explicitly prohibits discrimination based on gender identity and sexual orientation. Right? The hate crimes bill was great. It didn't actually protect against discrimination. I mean, I guess in theory it did. You know, the FBI had to, you know, but it didn't. I mean, this is the first one that is an anti-discrimination, that there are anti-discrimination provisions. And that's a really, really huge deal. And a couple of things to understand about it politically is, number one, our allies in the women's community, our allies in the Native American community, in the immigration community, in the progressive parts of Congress, were 100% behind us. They had our backs. I was going to say they were 100% on our backs, but I think that's just an expression. They were 100% fighting for us. And there was never, while there was serious conversation by the Republicans who opposed the bill, you know, and opposed it also because it had LGBT people in it, besides them, the supporters of the bill, there was never any talk really of taking us out. And all of our allies did a phenomenal job and made it very clear from the start that it was, we were in. Mm-hmm. And then the LGBT groups, like the Anti-Violence Project, the LA Gay and Lesbian Center, and HRC, all of whom have played a really big role in this, were absolutely rock solid.
Excellent, excellent. So let me ask you, going forward, because this certainly sounds like, we've seen movement. We saw that letter that over 100 Republicans sent as a friend of the court brief to the Supreme Court about gay marriage. We've seen other movement, but yet we haven't seen a lot of overt movement among actual members of Congress, or frankly, the White House, except for like things like this, where he mentions gender identity. You know, we had, for example, one thing that jumps out to me is that letter from that 11-year-old girl, Sadie, who basically asked the president, "Don't you remember about us too?" And do you think that feeling can this translate? I mean, we saw Senator Harkin said he's going to move into this year. Could that maybe turn an exercise in political theater into something that could actually result in a real law here?
Well, I want to unpack all of that a little bit and start with Senator Harkin was talking about action in his committee, the Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee. And I think we're very anxious to see that this year, and I'm pretty sure it'll happen. That does not in any way mean that ENDA is going to become law this year. The anti-equality majority in the House of Representatives just isn't going to let that happen. And this isn't like the Violence Against Women's Act for women's. I always say women's. I don't know why. The Violence Against Women Act or even comprehensive immigration reform where the Republicans and even the conservative Republicans felt like they were back in the corner and had to support women. That's not the case with ENDA. And so it may be the case soon with ENDA, by the way. But right now, alienating gay people, which is what they think of as ENDA, isn't as dangerous for Republicans as alienating women or immigrants.
I see what you're saying, but I thought it was interesting. I mean, do you think that because let's be honest, I mean, the Democratic Party has gotten a lot of criticism after the election when, for example, President Obama is still declining to sign that executive order. That's had a lot of negative press in the LGBT press. There's a lot of people who have been asking, okay, the election's over. Is it our turn now, essentially? And do you think that the Democratic Party is maybe feeling some pressure enough so that maybe we'd at least get a vote in the full Senate, for example?
Oh, well, I'm very hopeful we're going to get a vote and a pass in the we're going to get it passed in the Senate. There's no way to promise that, either for them to promise it or for me to promise it. But Senator Harkin's not trying to get it through committee just for the fun of it. So I think it will pass the Senate. I don't know if it'll be this year, but it'll be this Congress. So it could spill into 2014. I think we'd all like to see it sooner than later. But remember, ENDA's not even introduced yet.
True.
Which isn't a bad thing. There's just some old fashioned stuff in it that a lot of us are advocating to get updated. Let me try to think of an example. There's a thing called disparate impact, where laws have disparate effect if they say, it's legal to discriminate against gay people. Something having disparate impact would be if they had a policy at the company that said, we will only hire married people. But since it was illegal for gay people to have to be married, it would have a disparate impact on them. Right. So ENDA until now has said that there's no room for disparate, or there's no ability to have disparate impact claims. So that should be gone. The religious exemption has been broadened over the years. We would like to see that unbroadened, narrowed, I wish it was the word. So there's stuff like that, I'm just sort of spacing on the other things. There's just 7 or 8 of these things that we'd all, like to see. So a lot of our groups have been advocating for those, and we want that resolved before it's actually introduced. But, yeah, hopefully it will. But, you and I are never going to agree on this, apparently, because, we were in Philadelphia. Your listeners don't know. We were in Philadelphia together 2 weeks ago at a thing, and we went at it again. You seem to think that the president is not supportive of LGBT people, or is not supportive of trans people.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I do think he's supportive. What I don't think he is politically courageous. And, he's not keeping the promises that he made when he needed our money and our votes. And he said, vote for me, and I will use, as in his words, the weight of my administration to fight for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And I don't think he has kept that promise, not after the first election or the second. And I think it's fair to call him out on that.
Well, so he did send really amazing people to testify when there were hearings in the Senate and in the House, the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, and I forget who the other one was, maybe an EEOC commissioner he had appointed. There hasn't been much else for him to do. There's nothing he can do for Enda right now. I mean, if he said, what can I do for Enda? I mean, I don't know what I'd say.
But come on. I mean, he knew that there was nothing he could really do for marriage, but that didn't stop him from getting out and getting public about it. I mean, the fact that he's the president.
He actually was doing a lot for marriage. But in this case, first of all, one of the obstacles we're facing right now is the LGBT movement has now largely succeeded in convincing everybody from the president to the media, actually most LGBT people, that all we care about is marriage. And so it's a different thing. I mean, we can't even get our people all excited about Enda.
Yeah. And that brings me to something. I've been thinking about this a lot since our event in Philly, and a lot of people. I got a chance to talk to not only you, but Allison Robinson and some really incredible people there who I met for the first time and was just amazing. And one of the things that I've been wondering about is now, since for the last, I don't know, several months, we've been seeing what seems to me to be an increased effort on the part of the Human Rights Campaign. We've seen them issuing press releases and as you said earlier, being active in trying to push for the end of executive order and trying to push for our inclusion in the Violence Against Women Act. And yet, at the same time, I think it's fair to say that they're still putting the bulk of their money and their boots on the ground in marriage. And so what I'm wondering, I guess, is how relevant is HRC to our movement these days in terms of workplace rights? In other words, in terms of issues that are not marriage. I was wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Well, HRC still is the best connected LGBT organization on the Hill. They really just are. And they have some really good lobbyists, skill-wise, and they are going to be a leader in the effort to move Enda along this Congress. And when Enda finally passes, they will have played an important part in it. I think they're very relevant. Now, that being said, like all the rest of the LGBT movement, they're relying primarily on raising marriage money and the excitement in the community is all around marriage. And so, yeah, I mean, it's getting harder and harder for, I want to be careful because there's actually a lot of really great work going on, a lot of great trans work going on in LGBT organizations. Mm-hmm. But the lion's share of their funding is coming from marriage, and the lion's share of it is going to marriage. It's also true that that's kind of helping us in some ways. The marriage fight really has brought in a lot more allies to the movement for whatever reason. Maybe it was just time, and since marriage was at the forefront, that's done it. But I mean, where I stand. I'm totally for marriage. I'm just shocked, aghast, annoyed, and terrified that it's really taken over the whole movement.
Right.
And I don't think we shouldn't be working on marriage. I just don't think we ever should have made it the only important thing in the movement. And even though there is really good work being done in other things, it just pales in comparison to what's happening in the movement. I mean, there's several states this year that, we were really hopeful we'd see some movement on some other stuff, and it's just been pushed aside for marriage. And that's just how it goes. So is HRC doing that? Yeah, everybody's doing it.
So let me ask you, I mean, do you think, I mean, is this focus, and I agree with you, I understand the reasons that you're saying, but do you think that, that the way HRC is doing things, and given that they're as influential as they are, when we're talking about ENDO, when we're talking about workplace rights, when we're talking about the stuff that directly affects the working class and the poor and the working class and middle class folks, is HRC more a part of the solution than they are a part of the problem, or is it? How do you see that? I mean, is what they're doing making it tougher to get ENDA and all these other laws? And
I don't think so. I think what's making it, first of all, to just squarely put the blame on where it belongs right now, forget about past mistakes and past inadequacies of any kind on anybody's part, including my own or NCTE's. We can't pass ENDA right now because there is an anti-equality majority in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Right.
I mean, it's that simple. So as long as the people in these safe districts keep electing these people, it's going to be really hard to do it. Now, it's also true that, you know, some number of years from now, I don't know if it's 5 or 20, you know, we're going to have brought all of these people along and we'll win anyway. But, you know, for now, I mean, you see, like you said, there's Republicans blocking some marriage equality right now. Now, if you look at the people who signed the amicus brief, if I'm not mistaken, there's only two current office holders.
Right.
The Republican office holders. Otherwise, it's like I saw that Governor Tom Ridge from my state, Pennsylvania, signed on today. The former Governor Ridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who was also the first Homeland Security Secretary. You know, he doesn't have anything to lose right now. These people in some of these districts have so frothed everybody up over, you know, being anti-gay and anti-marriage that, you know, they can't they still are afraid to support it. But, you know, they're not, I'll tell you, it is not HRC holding ENDA up. It is not President Obama holding ENDA up.
No, but come on. I mean, he could sign that executive order, and he's chosen not to, even after the election was over. And people, I think fairly, are asking, you know, hey, what's the problem now? Why is it you can sign all these different things and not be afraid to come out for trans and LGBT inclusion in the Violence Against Women Act? You can go there on immigration. You can go there on all these things. But for some reason, you can't protect 22% of the LGBT American workforkforce. Do you think that that has an impact?
I mean, well, it doesn't have an impact on ENDA. I mean, I don't think it would. It would help us get ENDA passed. But you know, he should sign it. You know, I've been in meetings, you know, asking for it to get signed and issued. You know, that's an important thing. I've taken the lead in some of those meetings. I've sat there in some of those meetings. We're all trying really hard for that, and, you know, it's not doing it. And, you know, I think it's for a lot of reasons. Part of it is because he is doing so many executive orders. You know, he can't just do all executive orders all at once, or it looks like he's trying to be the king.
Do you know, like, a reason why the administration is saying, well, we don't want to do this because? I mean, that's what I don't think we've heard.
Well, it's still under consideration. But I'll give you some reasons. And again, I want him to sign it. I think it's dumb that he hasn't signed it. You know, I don't think there would be any cost at all to it. But, you know, I can imagine that the White House is very, you know, we see this as some sort of a jobs bill or an emphasis commission bill. You know, what it is business regulation.
Yeah.
Now, it's business regulation we believe in, but, you know, whenever anybody in government does business regulation, business interests freak out on them.
Yeah.
So I bet that's part of it. I'm not justifying it because I think we should. But, you know, we have so much stuff. I went to the signing ceremony for the Violence Against Women Act today.
Mm-hmm.
And a high-ranking government official came up to me and asked if I would come in and have lunch with all of his lawyers and talk to them about how to interact better with trans people they may come in contact with. Now, in some ways, that feels kind of yucky, right?
Yeah,
you'd sort of hope everybody would be upset, but we know that not everybody is, and so this is somebody who's concerned about that, and that's a big deal. And we're doing training, we collectively are doing training all over the federal government. It's moving crazy slow, and I get that. It's frustrating for us. You know, it's why MPTE has something like 50 or 60 things going at all the time. It's why we seem to be getting so much done. We have so many things going on in so many different agencies. You know, it just takes time to get them done. You know, people have to sign off. And any agency that works with other agencies has to make sure that the policies they create don't impact the other policies. And, you know, all that takes way too much time, but that's what it is. So, you know, keep working. I have no doubt whatsoever that the White House is on our side. They don't always make the same decisions I would.
Yeah, because I'll tell you the truth. As somebody who's been paying attention for a while, I remember, I mean, it wasn't so long ago when we were hearing in, I think it was 2007, when Barney Frank was introducing the non-inclusive ENDA, when he was swearing up and down, oh, this will move the ball forward. If we do this little thing, it'll move the ball forward. And yet, it seems like the argument is turned around now, and now that it's, you know, the trans people are involved, and it's not just gays and lesbians, i.e. the people who get the media attention and have the most money, all of a sudden it's a problem. You know, it seems like once the money and the media attention disappear, and as they have since they're now all focused on marriage, it seems like all of a sudden then the attention of Congress and, frankly, the White House seems to follow the money, is what it seems
Well, it may, but I'll tell you what it is. In 2006, the Democrats took back control of the House, and then they lost it in 2010. And it doesn't matter now. It doesn't matter what the president says. It doesn't matter what I say. We can't get ENDA through the House of Representatives right now. Now, right. We have to keep educating. We have to be getting folks to trying to educate even the most conservative anti-trans Republican, because eventually they're all going to be on our side. And, most of them will claim they were always on our side. And it'll be weird. But right now, Washington is as messed up and as broken as everybody says it is.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you another question, because we see this all the time in terms of other political issues. How much do you believe that the mainstream media plays a role here? Because it seems like it's a self-perpetuating prophecy in the terms like gay marriage gets a lot of media coverage, so all of a sudden the politicians pay attention and they are talking about it, so it gets more media coverage, so it gets more attention. It seems like there's a circular thing going on there. And so do you think that the mainstream media and the focus on marriage plays a part in the political situation?
Absolutely, but it's the LGBT movement that's doing it. We're the ones that are training the media. Look at our media. Look at the LGBT media. It's all about marriage.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I asked that, because it plays in. And, you know, like, for example, I was saying this earlier on the show, it's so encouraging when you see a CNN contact somebody like me and say, hey, you want to talk about transgender unemployment? Because they're finally dealing with an issue that this is about transgender lives, not transgender transitions.
Yeah.
You know,
I hear you. I believe me, this is something I think about and whine about every day. But it's the movement doing it.
My question to you is, and we're running short on time, so I'm going to wrap this up in a second. But my question to you is there anything we can do? I mean, you know, I'm a little nothing internet radio show. But, you know, I mean, you know, write for the Huffington Post. There's people in the community who have far greater reach than I could ever hope to have. Is there something that we can do as a community to help change the calculus a little?
Well, I think we all have to do our work and focus on it. You know, it has, you know, at NCTE, we just don't do marriage, right? I mean, we're for marriage, but we don't do anything about marriage. And marriage is really important to trans people. But there's so much going into marriage, we feel like it would be, you know, unfair to the neediest trans folks who need a lot more than marriage. So we just don't. So I would tell everybody just, you know, hunker down and do their work and, you know, let the marriage train go by. You know, it's almost over. You know, it may take another 10, 15 years to clean it all up. But one way or another, we all know it's running down. But what that means is the LGBT movement is going to become, you know, much smaller than it is now. And, you know, and folks will be complaining about, you know, HRC not doing work. Well, HRC is going to be smaller than it is now by a lot. Then all the LGBT groups will, and probably NCTE may take hits too.
Yeah,
you know, because a lot of our money comes from gay people. Trans people, you know, haven't yet become really strong, good funders of stuff.
Hmm. Okay. All
right. So I would just suggest people to, you know, find if employment stuff is what's interesting to them, then do that work. You know, there's lots of different economic empowerment initiatives starting up all over the country. You know, and with trans people, you know, ID documents are an economic jobs issue.
Sure.
You know, some great activists in D.C. just got a birth certificate bill introduced, and it was introduced with all 13 members of all 13 members of the city council as co-sponsors. I mean, that's a really, that bodes well for the final vote, I think. And, you know, that's important for people to have the right documentation. I mean, we all know that. And, you know, NCTE is, you know, really focusing on that too. And I would just ask everybody just keep focusing on what's important to them. We're going to get there. Hey, I could just correct one thing. It's not a correction. It's just an addition.
Sure.
I just want to remind you about the executive order. And what we're talking about for folks who may not know is the president would sign something saying that his agent, in order to get funded by any of his agencies, so as a contractor, so it would be defense contractors, the people who sell pencils to the government, or people who run anti-violence projects with government money, et cetera, they wouldn't be allowed to discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
But what trans people need to know is that we already trans people have that already because of the Mia Macy decision that the EEOC did. The federal agency that monitors contractor compliance with anti-discrimination laws is called the OFCCP, Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs. Mm-hmm. They're in the Department of Labor. And they have an agreement with the EEOC that for sex discrimination, they use the EEOC's interpretation of sex discrimination in Title VII.
Interesting.
Since we now have an interpretation from the EEOC that Title VII discrimination against trans people is sex discrimination, OFCCP believes that too, and it's illegal currently for contractors to discriminate based on gender identity, just not sexual orientation yet.
Interesting, because I was not aware of that.
We will not leave the gay people behind.
Yeah, you know, I that brings up so many. Well, we don't need to go there. But, wow, Mara, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's always great to have you on because, you know, it's always great. Yeah, it's always a great conversation. We're going to have you on again because I'm hoping, you know, there's going to be some developments over the course of this year that are, we're going to want to pick your brain about because
a couple big ones coming up. You know, our focus is going to be heavily on immigration reform. that's our congressional focus for a little bit. You know, we're still working ENDA, but immigration reform is really, really an important thing for trans folks. And, you know, we're going to see, I'm happy to talk about that sometime.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's an important one. I mean, we focused on violence against women because that's, you know, the topic of today. And I thought it was huge. But immigration is of course, an important issue and one that both parties are engaged on. And maybe we'll get into that the next time we have you on.
Great. And, you know, the other legislative things that are going to happen are the reauthorization of the Older Americans Act. There's some really great LGBT stuff that could happen in that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, hopefully some of the educational stuff might happen in other education bills that come up. We might be able to get some LGBT stuff in there.
Right. Well, we just heard about California. They're trying to push something that protects transgender students' right to participate in sports teams in the gender that they identify in, which, of course, is very encouraging.
Yeah, it's actually a lot more than sports teams. That's a really
you know,
great
you always
bill.
Say, "Well, it's California," but it's still encouraging. You know,
yep, second best trans-friendly legislature in the country.
Second, really? Second, which one's the first?
D.C.
D.C. Oh, okay, fair enough. All right, I was going to say I didn't know of a state that had a more progressive
anti-discrimination law. Also, had every member of the city council was a co-sponsor.
Wow, that's awesome. That's excellent. Mara, I want to say thank you so much for coming in and spending time and talking to us. And we will catch you again really soon because I love talking
to you.
Perfect. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Yep. Bye.
Okay. Bye. All right, so that was Mara Kiesling, Executive Director of the National Center for Transgender Equality, and we are going to go to a quick break. We have got, what have we got? We have, something that you guys have heard on the show before. It's an Against Me song called Stop. Laura Jane Grace, of course, heading that band. And then something you might be familiar with, we played on the show before. We'll catch you in about five, gang.
Some time to think. Whoopee!
You won.
Hey, yeah, that.
Don't worry, we're professionals. We're doing this shit all the time.
My ears. Okay, there we go. All right, everybody. Thanks for sticking around. It is the Rebecca Gerard Show.
Oh, minor little technical. I think that song was just so overwhelming that nobody could talk over that thing.
It's awesome. It's so good. It's awesome. It's awesome. I love that song. And of course, you know, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this, of course, because, you know, I've made promises. But, you know, Joan is very LGBT inclusive. She appears at Pride events.
Come out, Joan.
Yeah, well, we've said that, yeah, but she's so, well, she'll be out when she's ready to come out, and okay. Who knows when that'll be.
That song we played before was from Against Me from several years back, but what a great song and so good. Stop was the name of that. Now, there is a bad thing going on. What in the world has happened to Laura Jane Grace's tour? I don't understand.
Well,
in the middle
apparently
of a tour,
her drummer quit. So she doesn't have a drummer right now, so they're not playing. Originally, they were going to play a tour with Bad Religion, which is a band that was around in the late 80s, early 90s. It was very popular, kind of, as I was kind of moving out of the movement, they were kind of like neo-punk.
I'm not familiar with them. It's an alternative band or what?
Well, they're punk, but, I guess you could argue hardcore. They were supposed to be touring with them, and apparently they had to cancel the tour because they lost their drummer. Now, why they lost their drummer, I have no idea. You can check out her Laura Jane Grace. She's on Facebook. She has a page.
And she's taken a lot of heat for this situation. I must say, I'm a little disappointed in some of these fans. They're on her case quite a bit for, they're bugging her for ticket refunds and shit like that. And that's really, that's bugging me. To see
that's
that kind
fucked
of stuff.
Up, yeah. You know, and on the one hand, you know, punk fans are kind of tough, you know.
All right.
But you know, hey, shit happens. What I would like to see is let's see Laura Jane Grace and her band, if they can. I mean, because don't forget, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, Joan Jett or some big name act that can write their own terms. This is a working band here. I mean, these are folks who they're probably not making millions of dollars. They're going. They're not headliners. They're openers.
She's not on a major label right now, although she was for a while.
There's limits to what she can do. It would be nice if maybe, you know, she was able to like play some shows that you know, people who had tickets for other shows that they couldn't see that, you know, could get not necessarily refunds, but
and
you know,
there are
could
still
get
shows.
It.
She's dropped out of the shows. The Bad Religion will still play. A Polar Bear Club is also on the ticket, but Laura Jane Grace and Against Me is not on the bill now. So
which sucks, and it's not her fault. And you know, I hope that the folks who are giving her a hard time are not trans folks. Because, you know, that would really suck. That would suck. Because, you know, here's somebody who is really going against the grain. I mean, I'll tell you, when I was a punk, gay, forget about trans. I mean, gay was less well received in reality. I mean, trans, you had people like Jane County who were out there. It was not something that was common in the punk movement, but it was there. But there was a very strong faction of the punk movement. It was what we used to call, back in the day, we used to call them the Red Lacers, the Nazi punks. Mm-hmm. People who were really, I mean, you know, anti-gay, anti-Jew,
anti-social,
anti-everything. You know, and there are still bands like that out now. They still exist. But, you know, things have changed. I mean, I don't think that they could, a transsexual rock star might have had a success. I mean, there were people who played with gender roles. David Bowie, for example, did it very early on. There were people who, and people who danced on the edge, like Elton John. But, you know, I think today, you know, I think it's great that we've evolved enough as a society and as maybe as a culture that somebody like Laura Jane Grace can go out there and be a punk star or be a punk rocker, and it's not an issue. It's not, you know, you don't have to be afraid. I mean, because I'll tell you, when I first came out, 1997, the first time that I went anywhere dressed as a woman in public. In other words, there, I had gone to a couple of events at my I had a therapist who was local to the area, and I used to go to her house for like these meetups with other trans folks, and that was one thing. It was a secure area. It was where certain people hung out. It was a it was a private situation. The first time I ever went out in public was to a Joan Jett concert, and I was really worried because, you know, Joan is not a punk rocker. She's a rock and roller. But she attracts a lot of the same crowd. There's a lot of overlap there. And I was very concerned. I said to myself, my God, am I going to walk into this thing and I'm going to get killed? I don't know. Well, I went with a friend who actually was in the same point in transition as I was. And she is a big girl, like 6'5". And like she's a prison guard and like no messing around. Kick your butt. So I felt a little bit more secure having somebody like that next to me. But we went to this show. It was Joan Jett. It was a local club, which no longer exists anymore. And this was 1997. I'm all dressed up in my black leather with the spandex and the whole nine yards. I looked a lot better than I do now. I could never wear spandex now. And we get into, we wait online, and it's freezing cold. I remember it was January. It was like freezing cold. And of course, needless to say, when you're wearing spandex in that kind of weather, it's,
I've done that.
Not fun.
I've done it.
All right. And so we finally get into this thing. We finally get into the show, and I'm all worried, and I'm figuring, are we going to get our asses kicked? And we go in, and we finally make it through the gate, and we hand in our tickets, and we go in, and we look over, and there's this alcove in the area. And it's I look over, and there's like about 20, 25 trans women standing there. And they, one of them sees us walk in, and they look over, and one of them yells, "Hey, girls, come on over. Join the party." We're like, oh, shit. Wow. Not only are we not going to get our asses kicked, but we're here in force. And that's a thing. And it's maybe it's unique to Joan. I don't know. Maybe it's just certain artists, certain bands lend themselves to certain crowds. I don't know what it is. But I will tell you that I, in all the years I've been going to see Joan Jett, since I transitioned, and I was going to see her long before I transitioned, but since I transitioned, I have never had to worry about my safety in a way that I had to worry about it when I went to other shows. I mean, there are certain bands that I enjoy that I won't go see play live anymore, because I don't feel that I can go and be safe. I've actually been attacked at hardcore punk shows because of my appearance. And this was when I was back, it was like 98, 99. I was mid-transition. My hair was long. I kind of had a feminine kind of gait to me. But, you know, I was still detectably male. And I almost got killed at one of these shows. I mean, you know, somebody took a shot at my head and almost knocked me unconscious. And eventually, after that, I said, you know what? It's not worth it. I'll listen to the CDs. It's not worth it. It's not worth risking my safety just to go see a band play. It's just not worth it.
So having a little crap on her Facebook is relatively minor. What she might, Laura Jean Grace might run up against some nasty types at her shows. It occurred to me that's a dangerous mix of people sometimes.
Exactly, And you know, when you're opening for another band like Bad Religion, most of those fans are there to see Bad Religion.
Yep,
which means that you know you may be well received. Or you may not. And I will tell you that I've seen some bands at punk shows that have really not been well received. And, you know, and other opening acts. I remember one time, this is going back, I guess this is about 2000, maybe 1999 or 2000. I went to see Joan Jett in New York. And the opening act was not a band. It was, some of you may remember, there's this guy, he's a comedian. His name is Colin Quinn. He used to be on MTV on the show Remote Control. At that point, I think the show was still on, and he was just this comedian. And he came on to open for Joan. Well, this was the wrong crowd for this guy. They weren't interested in seeing some comedian. They were screaming for Jones so loudly that you could not hear his jokes. It was the wrong crowd for this particular guy. And they were, and I should say we, because I was there too, unmerciful. Just like, get off the stage, you suck, we hate you, we want Joan, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was one of those kind of things. Punk rockers and hardcore rockers of any stripe really have no patience for stuff they don't care about. Get off, we want what we came to see. You know, and it happens. And so, you know, it has to be a concern with bands that are new, that feature somebody who is a departure, who are not like that which has come before. But I would like to think that what it really boils down to is, do you like the music? Is the music something you can get into? Is it, you know, because it's so hard at a live show when everything is over amplified and people are yelling and screaming and banging, you know, and you're not even sure if you've never heard the music before. Well, maybe you like it, maybe you don't. But sometimes it's so loud and so over amplified that you can't really even tell. So you wonder how well these bands are going to do when it's not somebody who is familiar to the audience. And so it's disappointing to me that Laura Jane Grace is getting crap. You know, I only hope that the crap that she's getting about this is because people are disappointed that they can't get a chance to see her. Not because they have a problem with her because she's not like Bad Religion, blah, 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 blah. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of difficult to tell just from reading her Facebook page. But that's my hope in any case. And I think it should be the hope, because in a lot of cases, and I would even argue in most cases, that if you want to change the politics, first you got to change the culture. And one of the ways you change the culture is through music and through, of course, through mainstream news media, but also through music, because it's the values of the music you grew up with. I know that the music that I grew up with, the values of that music influence me today. You know, a lot about punk was about freedom. It was about doing what you want, looking the way you want to look, being the way you want to be, and not taking crap from anybody. That was a large part of what the punk movement was about. And I carry those values with me today. And so I'm hoping that those values continue. Because, you know, the punk movement may not be what it was in the 80s and the 70s, but the values are timeless and they still apply. You know, just because we don't have, you know, you can't go see 10 punk bands on a Saturday night in New York anymore, doesn't mean that those values are any less valid. And if you listen to those old songs and you listen to what they're about, there's some very strong and valid values in those songs that apply to what we're talking about today. And so I'm hoping that once Laura Jane Grace gets her band situation worked out and gets back on the road and starts playing again, that we will see that the community, that the punk community, I guess you could call it, welcomes her back when she appears again. And I'm still hoping one of these days we're going to have her on the show. I'm going to try and contact her through Facebook. Maybe she's got a little time now that, you know, now that she's not going to be on tour. Maybe she can take a little time and talk to us, because I think she's an interesting figure. And I think she is a sign, hopefully. I hope she is a sign of progress. Now, Let's see, what else do we have going on here? Actually, we're almost time to go to a break. So before we go back to another story, let's see. You know, it's funny because a lot of times when I talk about punk and my punk days, it's almost like I'm a different person. And I am. I mean, let's be honest. When I was a punk, I was still living as a guy. And, part of what inspired me to get involved with punk, and even though I enjoy the music, I enjoy it today, post-transition and all that stuff, that hasn't changed. Part of what got me into that was a desire to be hyper-masculine and cure myself of this, you know, thing that I had. I mean, we didn't even have the word transgender at that point. So I didn't know what it was. I couldn't put a label on it. All I knew was I felt like a girl, and that's what I wanted to be. And I just couldn't be, because at the time, it just, there was no, it was nothing. There were no resources. I mean, what few resources were out there were specifically for gay men and lesbians. There was no such thing as transgender people. There was no political category. There was no social category. I mean, there were people, sure, but they all hung out in their own private little conclaves and had their own little meetings, and they didn't really get involved with national politics or even local politics. There were no laws protecting us. And so I lived in this fear that if I came out and said, this is what I want to do and who I want to be, that everything that I depended on in my life, everything I cared about in my life, all my friends, my family, all that, would all just go away. And you know what? There was no place I could go and no one I could talk to talk about that with. And so I stayed in the closet until 1997, until I was 35. And, you know, in a way, I envy the folks who are younger, who are coming up now, in a world where it's okay to say this is who I am. And I'm hoping that as those folks age into adulthood, and then the younger folks that follow them learn from those folks, that our culture is going to continue to evolve. And that these kind of questions, that a transgender punk star or a transgender anything isn't going to be that big a deal. And maybe, yeah, all right, maybe it'll be when we're in the old tranny's home, but it'll happen. Anyway, all right, it is now officially time for our break. And we have got another Anomaly Brennan song, always good. And this is We Belong. We will catch you in 5. Sticking around, and what a great show so far today. Mara Kiesling, as always, a great guest, always has good stuff to say. Love talking to her. There's some other stuff going on in the community. This is interesting. I thought this comes through us from Nevada, Carson City, which I believe is the state capital of Nevada. A bill adding attacks on transgender persons to a list of hate crimes and stiffening the penalty for offenders was unanimously approved by the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's
Nevada?
Senate Judiciary Committee. Yeah, very cool. Apparently, the measure goes to the full Nevada Senate for a vote. Now that it's passed out of the committee, allows an additional sentence of up to 20 years if the attack was motivated by an individual being transgender. The victim would also have the opportunity to file a civil suit against a person convicted of that kind of crime. Basically, the bill adds gender identity to the list that now includes race, color, religion, national origin, physical or mental disability, and sexual orientation. Extra sentences can be imposed on offenders if it was proved that the crime was motivated by one of these factors. One senator, Greg Brower from Reno, Republican, said this legislation does not give special rights to any group. He said it would be up to a judge after conviction to determine if the offender singled out the victim because of his gender identity. Before passage, the committee agreed to an amendment that expanded the list of hate crimes. It refers to the FBI list of crimes that fall into this category. And, of course, we know that because of the hate crimes law, that list does include sexual orientation and gender identity. So kudos to them. Kudos to Nirvana. It sounds like some band based out west,
Nirvana.
Right? Nirvana. Nevada. Kudos to them. Now, we should point out that although Nevada has a Republican governor, they have actually been, in recent years, have actually been leading on protecting their transgender citizens. And kudos to them. Now, of course, we've heard that a large amount of this is because of businesses who operate in the state. Let's not forget, most of this Nevada is desert. Two areas that have reasonable size populations are the Las Vegas area and the Reno area. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot of empty in between those two places.
Tons of tourists, and so that's a good reason for them to have that kind of progressive policy in spite of that Republican governor.
Right.
And then there's Vito the Enforcer who might want that too.
Well, let's also not forget that things like, for example, prostitution is legal in Nevada. Okay?
Oh, yes,
and so
it is.
And there are these clubs, and there are a lot of those kind of clubs, and some of them employ transgender women.
Okay.
Maybe even men, for all I know, but certainly trans women. They, as you said, they have a lot of people who go there for conventions and things like that from other parts of the country. And there have been situations where trans women have been mishandled, assumed they were prostitutes and that kind of thing. So that's not good for business. They don't want to be known. Las Vegas certainly doesn't want to be known as a place that discriminates on that basis, because that is going to cost them business from other parts of the country. And that, to me, is great, because it's a motivating factor. And if you can say to a business, not protecting transgender people, not treating us fairly, is going to cost you money, is going to cost you business, is going to hurt your economy, your business, your bottom line, if you can successfully make that argument. And let's be honest, don't forget, the majority of Fortune 500 companies already have these kind of protections in their own anti-discrimination policy. So it's not like this is a new thing. But if you can successfully make that argument, I think more and more you're able to make that argument, then I think we have a lot of power. I think that carries a lot of weight. And I think you're seeing it here in Nevada. So kudos to those folks for leading the way. And for, you know, Republicans, and I'm, you know, I bash Republicans on this show all the time, but kudos to this guy, Greg Brower, and whichever, I don't know of their names, so I can't say them on the air, but to the Republicans in Nevada who realize that treating people fairly and decently is good for business. Kudos to those folks. I mean, because, you know, here's the thing. Religion is one thing. And if you have a problem with somebody or a way of life or whatever because of your religion, that's fine. That's your business. You have every right to say, you know what, I have a problem with this because of my religion. But you don't have a right to impose it on other people, and certainly not a right to impose it on other people to their detriment. In other words, if you want to say, I think, and this is, you know, I'm not writing legislation here, so I mean, you know, but my attitude is if you want to be able to say, I have a religious objection to gay people, or I have a religious objection to trans people, and I don't want to serve them in my business. Well, you know, if you're Joe's Crab Shack, well, that's a bad example because Joe's Crab Shack is a major national chain. But if I'm, you know, Joe's Bait and Tackle, you know, that's one thing. If I'm McDonald's, that's another thing. And the truth is, you know, it wasn't so long ago that we felt that the argument was, oh, it's bad for business argument, was being used to say, well, we don't want to serve blacks, or we don't want to serve Jews, or we don't want to serve anybody else we don't like, because, you know, people who are not Jewish are going to have a problem with it. Or, you know what I mean? These same kind of arguments have been made throughout our history. And they're no more valid than they are now. And you know what? We passed laws, we protected these things, we made it illegal to discriminate on those basis, and guess what? The world did not collapse. Businesses did not go under because of it. You know, I mean, if you're a church, well, then you have the right to operate your church any way that you feel comfortable to do that. But when you're not in your church, when you're a business, when you're in the public sphere, when you're serving the average American, the average customer, well, no. You know, and if you don't like it, well, too bad. I mean, you got to be, you know, it's no more right to reject somebody because they're trans or because they're gay than it is to reject somebody because they're black. And I know there are a lot of people who are going to say, oh, well, you know, racial, it's not the same thing. And you know what? They're right. It is not the same thing. But in this particular aspect, I think it's very similar. Because if it's wrong to judge somebody by the color of their skin, what makes it right to judge somebody by the clothes that they're wearing? Or by the way they style their hair, or by how much makeup they happen to be making or not making, or by whether they call themselves Mr. or Ms. It makes no sense. And so in this particular context, in this particular sense, I think there is a correlation there. That if you're going to say that you're going to judge people to kind of semi-quote Martin Luther King, if you're going to judge people by the content of their character, well, that precludes a whole bunch of things. That means you're judging people by who they are, not what they are. And that includes how they present themselves to the world. That includes whether they're wearing a dress or a tie. That includes whether their skin, what color their skin is, where they happen to worship God. All these things. It's just differences that make us who we are, but should not exclude us from one another, in my opinion. And, you know, I don't think that people should use that gender identity, sexual orientation, or any of this stuff as a reason to really do anything. The only thing that sexual orientation is relevant as an excuse to take action against is if you don't feel like having sex with that particular person because they're gay and you're not. I mean, nobody's gonna have a problem with that. I mean, if you say if a gay man goes to another man and says, "Hey, I'm interested," and he says, "Sorry, I'm straight." Well, you know, too bad. That's reality. Just as it would be just as reality if the situation were reversed and a man went up to a woman and said, "Hey, honey, you want to have a date?" And she said, "Sorry, my girlfriend wouldn't like it." You know, I mean, it's the same principle there. That's personal choice. That's who you want to be with. That's who you want to have sex with. That's who you're sexual orientation, okay? By the same token, if you walk in and say, hi, you know, here I am, I want to apply for a job, whether they're gay or straight shouldn't matter. Whether they're trans or not shouldn't matter, okay? Because, you know, they're, and you know what? And I actually had somebody make this argument to me a few weeks ago. Somebody who's not a member of the community, somebody I know away from the community, says, well, you know, I can't see how that's good, you know, because if people can tell that this is a trans person, it might be negative, you know, because, you know, those trans women, most of you trans women, you know, you, it's pretty easy to tell. And my response to them was I said, first of all, yeah, that's true for a lot of us. I mean, I'm under no illusions that I'm undetectable, you know, but we also have, you know, Jenna Talikova and Janet Mock and Isis King and Laverne Cox and all these beautiful trans women who you would never know in a million years unless they told you, although they're hit the media. So, they, you know, if you know anything about what's going on in the media, they might. But... You know, the thing is, the way I responded was I said, I mean, would you, if you had a business and you had a qualified woman walk into your business who said, I'm perfectly qualified and I'm great and I have the right resume, I have everything you want, but she wasn't like model pretty, would you refuse to hire her on the basis of her appearance? I mean, do you only hire attractive people? Well, you know, if you're running a modeling agency, that's one thing. If you're running a TV station and you're hiring on-air talent, that may be one thing. If you're hiring people to be an accountant or to stock shelves or something like that, why should that make a difference? I mean, what? We should have a ban against ugly people now? I mean, come on. You see, that's the thing. And, you know, the person who I was speaking to was kind of taken aback because I don't think they thought about it in quite those terms. You know, I mean, I know I ain't winning any beauty contests. And I don't have a problem with that. But that doesn't mean that I shouldn't, that I should be ineligible for a job because I don't, you know, I'm not a beautiful woman. You know, I'm just not, and I never will be. And there are a lot of women who are born women who will never be beautiful. That doesn't mean they should be considered less capable or less of a quality candidate for any given job. Content of character, it works both ways. And so that's really, you know, you got to think about it in these terms. And you may go through, like I have, I mean, I've applied for, oh, God, hundreds of jobs. But, you know, the reality is, and I knew this when I got started doing this, that, you know, I'm so well covered in online that anybody who does a Google search on my name is going to know exactly what I'm about, whether or not they realize I'm trans at first glance or not. You know, between the show and my work for the Huffington Post, the Bellerico Project, all the mentions I've gotten, that CNN interview now, all that stuff, I'm all over the web. And so anybody who takes 5 minutes to put my name into Google is going to know. And I accepted that from day one. I realized that that's what was going to happen. Did I realize it was going to be quite so... important in failing to get a job? No, I guess I really underestimated how much of an impact it was going to have. But then at the time that I made this decision, I'll admit, you know, I was kind of naive, honestly. It never occurred to me that when I transitioned, I was signing away my right to work, the right to be fairly considered for a job. But that's the reality. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's so important that we continue to keep the pressure up on Congress, on the president, on local, state and local governments to keep progressing, to keep pushing these laws forward, to keep extending rights and benefits and protections to LGBT people. Because the further that we go, the further that we push, the further that we get, the easier it becomes, the smoother the road becomes for the people who are following us, for the younger folks, for the folks behind them, for people like my little sister who's just about to turn 19 years old. You know, folks like that. Now she's lucky. She's an artist. So she's going to be judged on the quality of her artwork. But a lot of folks are not. And right now she works, she was working in an art store, you know, she was working in retail. It's where a lot of people, where a lot of young people get their first jobs. Well, if that's shut to you, if it's legal for someone to say, we don't hire gays, if it's legal to say, we don't hire trans people, what kind of a world, what kind of a start in life, in adult life, do these kids get? You know, you want to make it better. You want to say it gets better. Well, you got to make it better. Just talking about it on a video for 2 minutes doesn't do shit. Making it better takes work. And it takes work from the beginning. It's not all about, okay, because you know what? Marriage doesn't make it better. What makes it better is being able to put food on the table, to provide a secure and safe home for your family. That's what makes it better. The rest is gravy. First you gotta take care of hunger and homelessness. First you gotta make sure that there's food on the table and a safe and warm bed at night for yourself and your family. That's what makes it better. Marriage rights make it comfortable, make it nice for people who already have those things taken care of. And that's why I'll say it. I've said it 100 times. I'll say it again. You never see the argument that marriage rights are what we should be focusing on from people who live on their paychecks. It's always from the people who already have plenty of money, nice homes, good jobs, people who already have all that stuff taken care of. They're the ones who think that marriage should be the focus. The wealthy. The wealthy, the upper middle class, the people who don't have to worry about where their next paycheck is coming from, the people who don't have to worry about if they're going to put food on the table that night, the people who don't have to worry about if they're going to pay the rent that week, the people who don't have to worry about how they're going to get the car fixed if it goes down, the people who have what they need for the basics of life. Those are the people who are the most vocal about marriage. And I think that's what you see. I think that's what you see. And who's making the decisions here? Okay, do you think any of those federal legislators in the Democratic Party are scrabbling for change? Do you think they're worrying about where their next meal is coming from? Do you think anybody on the executive board of the Human Rights Campaign, where they have to donate $50,000 a year in order to get a vote, do you think they're worrying about it? No. And this is what you see. This is what we've seen for decades. So you know what? I hope Mara is right. I hope that Senator Harkin moves into this year. I hope it gets through the committee as it should. I hope it gets a full vote. Even if it gets filibustered, even if something negative happens as a result, it will be useful. And the reason it'll be useful is because then it'll tell us where the problems are. Right now, these politicians, they can hide. They can just say, don't take a vote, so that way I don't have to vote. I don't have to put myself out. Well, when you give politicians, and it doesn't matter, Republican, Democrat, it's all the same. You give people a back door to avoid taking responsibility, and they're going to be rushing for it. That's the way politicians work. I don't care if you're a United States senator or the assistant mayor of a town of 500, okay? If you give people a way to avoid taking responsibility and to avoid taking a stand, they're going to be rushing for that. And so I think you have to finally say no. You have to take a position. You have to stand up for your values. You can't just put your values into play when you're campaigning for money and votes. You have to do it when the legislation is on the line. You have to lead. You have to not just act like a leader. You have to be a leader. You have to lead. That's why we put these people into office. And if you don't lead, if you're not willing to stand up for what you campaign on, for the values that you promote and say you believe in, when you're asking for people to donate to your campaigns, to volunteer, to vote for you, if you're not willing to do that, then you don't deserve to be in the United States Congress or any other elected position, and you need to be replaced by people who will. We need to elect leaders, not politicians, and that's the difference. Right now, we have a Congress full of politicians. We have a White House full of politicians. We need leadership, not political calculus. We need people who believe that what's right is what's right, and are willing to fight for what they believe in, not just what's politically convenient for themselves. And, you know, I'll tell you something else, okay? Because, you know, we mock the Tea Party all the time, but, you know, there's something to be said for people who are promoting and voting into office, these ideologues, who are saying, you know what, I don't give a shit whether the government goes down. I don't care. I came here to promote an agenda, and that's what I'm going to do. Now, I don't think that's necessarily the right way to govern. But you know what? I do respect the fact that they're willing to say, this is what people put me in office to do, and so I'm going to stand firm on this. And I'm going to be just as much of an advocate for this position now in office as I was when I was campaigning for it. I think there is something to be said about that. I think there is something to be respected about that. Okay, again, I don't think necessarily that it's the right thing to do in terms of just governing overall. I don't think you can govern by ideology. I think you have to govern the whole country, understanding that there are people who don't share your beliefs, but you're still in charge. You know, you're a leader of the American the United States Congress, not the Congress of people who think like I do. And I think there's a little bit too much of that. But I also think that if you go in and you say, I'm running for office because this is what I believe, like a certain president who's now in office did, that then when you're in office, you have to stand up and you have to say, I made this promise. And so I'm going to keep it. And that's what I was saying to Mara. Mara doesn't think that I, or at least she didn't think, that I believe that President Obama supports our community. And that's not true. I do believe he supports our community. I do believe he gets it. I do believe that he is, you know, in favor of protecting civil rights for all Americans. I believe that. I have no doubt that that's what he believes. But he's not leading on these issues. And it's one thing to say, this is what I believe. It is yet another very different thing to say, this is what I'm going to do to honor the promises that I made to you. And he's made a big show. I'm sure you've seen it. Of saying to people, I'm keeping my promise on this, I'm keeping my promise on that. Well, yeah, and that's the thing. But then when he's faced with, you know, I mean, where was he in the 111th Congress? His first Congress when he was president, when they had everything that they needed to get EDPA passed into law, or at least that's what they said. Now, I have since heard people who said that they didn't have the votes, that Diego Sanchez, whose clip we've played many times, was wrong, that the votes were not there. I've heard people say that. Who's correct? I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm not somebody with that kind of connection. Although I am going to, I will tell you that I've spoken to Diego Sanchez by email, and we are going to get him on the show. So I want to have him on. And I want to ask him about that, if he believes that, you know, knowing now with hindsight, if he believes. And we'll find that out soon. I'm going to schedule him soon. Lots of great guests coming up on this show, going forward. Not going to tell you all the names, but suffice it to say, that event in Philly, got to meet a lot of people. There are going to be a lot of people who are very cool in LGBT media and activism who are going to be on this show. And wow, that about does it for us. I want to remind people. If you missed anything, if you missed Mara, if you missed any part of the show, we will be repeating in about 5 minutes after a lovely musical interlude from Mr. Mike. And we are done. We're done. We had a great show. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks for supporting this media. We will catch you all next week. Have a good week, everybody.
Show the people!